Welcome to Zero Downtime, the new podcast brought to you by DCD's editorial team in partnership with Vertiv, the world's leading critical infrastructure provider.
Vertiv has kept the world's leading businesses connected for more than 50 years. We build, deliver, and support critical infrastructure that's available, sustainable, and future-ready. Visit us at Vertiv.com and see what we can do for you.
Welcome again to DCD Downtime, the podcast where we bring back one of our top-rated guests, Mark Munro. Formerly with Microsoft, now with Energetic Consulting. And we spoke a year or so ago about hydrogen, in particular Microsoft's involvement with hydrogen as a backup option, but just generally the development of the hydrogen market. So we're going to spend half an hour talking about where you see hydrogen now, Mark. From your new position and 1 year on, how is hydrogen looking to you?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me back, Peter. I think that what's happened with hydrogen in terms of direct impact to the data center industry is that we're in a bit of a holding pattern.
Mm-hmm.
I left Microsoft in June and turned my projects over to some of the other folks in our research and development group there. So they're still continuing on with the efforts to qualify and make sure that there are products available, logistics, are in line with what's needed for hyperscale expansion. And I've seen articles that talk about hydrogen being used in different applications by different types of companies, as well as hyperscale companies. And I think what the whole marketplace is doing right now is waiting for product to be available. When I was at Microsoft, we had qualified that 3-megawatt prototype with Plug Power about a year ago, and a little over a year ago. And now we're just waiting for them to finish productizing, devices that they will eventually offer to the marketplace.
Right. So essentially, you made a sort of drop-in replacement for a diesel generator entirely powered by hydrogen through fuel cells.
At the time, that was our goal. What we did was we said the simplest way to build it into the data center infrastructure is make no other changes to the electrical system. Make it look exactly or as much like a diesel generator as we could in terms of start time, in terms of accepting load, in terms of capacities and connectivity. So, in Microsoft's case, we connected it through the inverter to the systems that would be connected in the data center, and it could have been a drop-in replacement for a diesel generator.
Yeah.
There are other ways you could use hydrogen fuel cells that are being investigated by the industry as well, since it's basically a DC power generator. There's maybe no need to have it go through an AC inverter to connect the alternating current side when there are direct current needs within the data center.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, like a previous Microsoft project, put the fuel cells in the racks, or I seem to remember above the racks on a weird sort of shelf above them or something. So, and then why not do that indeed?
And so I think what you'll see is that the interest will continue to grow in the industry because when you think about the portfolio of backup solutions that are available to the data center industry, you've got things like reliable grid, where in certain countries like the Nordic countries and in a few other places in the world, you might be able to connect two reliable grids to a data center and do without generators completely. Facebook, now Meta, looked at doing that in their Lulia installation 10 years ago, but decided to stick with the more conventional, and they were able to because there was less pressure around pollutants and carbon footprint and things like that 10 years ago than there is now. So reliable grid is one solution. Large batteries, are another, where the grid is not quite reliable enough to be able to have zero generators or zero backup power. In many other places, it's reliable enough that any outage that happens is less than 2 hours or less than 4 hours. And in those cases, you might be able to build a battery energy storage system that would ride through a 2 or 3 or 4 hour outage until grid power became available again. And that might be a viable solution to get you to 5 nines or 6 nines on the power availability.
Yeah, and the whole 5 nines, the whole 5 nines idea is for some people less crucial. I was talking to someone the other day who's got fuel cells, but they're powered by methane, natural gas, and he thinks the natural gas grid is reliable enough that those fuel cells on their own represent 4 nines.
Yep. And yeah, gas frequently is modeled as 10 times more available than the electrical grid, because most of the time, in the event of a failure on the natural gas grid, you have pressure in the system still, and the system will continue running, still providing natural gas for some time until the pressure gets too low.
Yes, I mean, a gas grid is actually a storage system in itself.
Yes, exactly, an energy storage system. Yeah, and so again, a portfolio of solutions, I think, for any of the providers, battery energy storage. But there are certain places in the world where it's desirable to have data centers, and there aren't reliable grids or semi-reliable grids. And, so then your only solutions are some sort of fuel-based generator system, be that, a low carbon or zero carbon renewable diesel. Mm-hmm. Might be an option, but then you still have nitrous oxides and particulates to deal with, mm-hmm. which are frequently included in the air quality permits that give difficulties, or a hydrogen-based, either hydrogen combustion or hydrogen fuel cells. Mm. And I think you'll see data centers get really creative over the next 10 to 15 years, and where it was, you built a data center, you bought generators. Up until now, that's always been the way it's been. And they've been diesel generators for the most part. A few natural gas, but, almost all diesel generators. Mm. And now, over the next 10 years, I think, like I said, I think you'll see this data center uses this solution, that data center uses that solution, and they'll mix and match based on capabilities of the grid and the needs of the data center. There'll be more application sorting, as you were talking about. Oh, my application really is fine with 3 nines. I don't need to have cat videos available, not 5 nines of the time. So I'm going to move my cat videos to a less reliable data center, or a slightly lower availability data center, not less reliable, but lower availability, so that I can, number one, save money. Number two, still provide the service that people want and need, and keep it so that it might be, continued free offerings. But you get to places like the California, where with climate change and the increased number of wildfires and the increased electrical grid outages that those cause, California Energy Commission warns data center operators to be prepared for 96-hour outages. There's no battery in the world no battery chemistry, no energy storage solution other than hydrocarbons and maybe hydrogen that you could ride through a 96-hour outage that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
So the other thing that I think is going to push the industry along, in the United States at least, is we're starting to see the flow of the funds from the Infrastructure Act the Infrastructure Renewal Law, what's called the IRA, in the U.S. and billions of dollars are being put towards hydrogen hubs, hydrogen transport systems, storage research, generation of hydrogen. There are subsidies on hydrogen that in some cases get it very close to a dollar per kilogram.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's where you start to compete with hydrocarbons in terms of the energy per dollar and the types. And so I remember I've spoken of this before, in the 2000s in the 2010s, the U.S. Department of Energy had a program they called SunShot, which was an effort to speed up development in the solar industry to get the cost of solar arrays down to $1 per watt. And at the time, you know, commercial and residential installations were, you know, $3.50 a watt to $6 a watt, that kind of thing. And so their target was, you know, get down to a third or a sixth of the cost. And they actually completed that. That started in 2010, and their goal was by 2020 to get to a dollar a watt. They actually made it in 2016.
Ooh.
And there was this huge, you know, influx of money and manufacturing capability and regulatory information. And the German, you know, government had subsidies for solar that really made things go fast. And China entered the market in the manufacturing space. And, you know, all this stuff happened in that 6 or 7 years because there was so much focus on it. And I see the exact same kind of things going on in the hydrogen industry in terms of the projects that are being announced, the companies that are involved, the governments that are subsidizing and funding and encouraging projects, you know, all through Europe. And even the U.S. in that IRA bill, there was, I think, $8 billion for the generation of or the creation of these hydrogen hubs. It's yet to be awarded, but they expect to you know, have at least 4 of those hubs around the U.S. That'll be centers of generation and transport and distribution and creation of green hydrogen. And you know, their goal is, again, by 2020, the U.S. Department of Energy at least has a target. They're calling it I think it's called the hydrogen shot now.
Mm-hmm.
But they're trying to get to a dollar a kilogram
by 2030.
By 2030.
Yeah.
And with the same, you know, energy, you know, enthusiasm and activity that went on with the SunShot, I think it's possible that we could get there before. Certainly with the subsidized. You know, the U.S. now has a $3 per kilogram subsidy for green hydrogen. And so, you know, really you need to just get down to $4 a kilogram. And I think you'll see that hydrogen economy start to develop. Interestingly, in the groups that I've been associated with, they're working in the hydrogen industry, and they project, you know, who the big hydrogen users will be and, you know, what the uses will be. And transportation is going to be much, much larger than the footprint of data center usage for a long, long time. I think data centers will expand more quickly than the transportation industry will, you know, just because internet years are like dog years, right? And so we move faster in our industry. And as soon as product's available and as soon as hydrogen's available, people are chomping at the bit to try and get things going. Because they're being constrained on capacity development, right? I just saw an article the other day about a 1 gigawatt data center proposal in the U.S., near the U.S. East Coast, near Northern Virginia, but across the line in Maryland. And the Maryland regulators were refusing to permit, you know, the diesel generators that would be required.
Mm.
They won't even start.
Yeah,
they won't even allow them to have a few generators. They're saying, "No, you got to find some non-polluting way of doing this."
And so, yeah,
you know, there's a gigawatt of business waiting to happen that is going to be forced into some kind of a clean solution. So
yeah, and that's our fault.
Lots of pressure, lots and lots
you and me. That's our fault. The woman on the commissioner. Who was talking to Aligned Energy about this was saying, you know, why are you proposing details? I've read in the press that you can do this with hydrogen or HVO or microgrids. You know, I think there's so much awareness of the alternatives that the old school diesels are going to be slightly unpopular now. The hydrogen shot is going to be about distribution as well as the sort of generation and creation. I mean, they're not going to find a new way to do electrolysis, are they? It's just making the electrolysis plants cheaper and finding better ways to transport hydrogen around. How is it going to be transported? We were talking earlier about sticking some hydrogen into the gas grid. Is that emerging as the best way of doing it? Or
I think that in the beginning that it will mostly be transported by truck. In the western U.S. out here where I live near Denver, we have a lot of scattered oil drilling developments, and I have this picture of the hydrogen transport system developing the way that I see the oil transport system has developed over the last 30 or 40 years that I've been out here near Denver. They start with, this is a promising well site, this is a production site, and they make it a producing site. And then they begin to pull product out by trucks. And when there gets to be enough traffic and the profits are high enough, they may have a rail spur line that goes to a centralized area. And then they transport by rail as much as they can because that's cheaper. And then, over decades, as they begin to decide, yeah, this is an area where we need a pipeline, then they start to, look at how to build pipelines to broader areas that can make the transport of the oil much, much cheaper. And I think we'll see a progression like that in the hydrogen industry. With the hydrogen hubs, almost all of the transport plans that I have seen so far had been truck-based or some kind of, ground transportation-based. And then we'll get to the point where, blended hydrogen lines might be developed over the next couple of decades, I would say, before they really start to pan out widespread. But there are technologies that, it could be used because besides transportation, heating or heat generation is one of the other largest uses predicted for hydrogen, and that'll be things like, blending natural gas 5, 10, 20% with hydrogen reduces the carbon content of that combustible fuel by the amount of hydrogen that's in there, right? So you could have a steel mill that could knock 10 or 20% off of their carbon footprint by having a blended natural gas hydrogen solution for, creating the heat that they need for their processes.
That's got to be worth doing.
Aviation is also looking at ways to either directly use the hydrogen in fuel cells or to produce syn fuels that would be carbon free or carbon neutral in terms of their industry. So that's what my understanding is, that the transport and distribution is. It's really about. It's kind of like if you remember with Tesla in the U.S. When they first started manufacturing, they knew that one of the biggest problems was there weren't enough charging stations. Mm-hmm. So they, along with rolling out the vehicles that could use the charging stations, they paid for charging stations.
Right.
Because they knew that that's what they needed in order to get the distribution network widespread enough that you could travel from California to New York in the U.S. Using an electric car.
So, yeah. Significant.
I think you'll see the same thing in hydrogen. These hubs will be center points for creation of green hydrogen and transport of green hydrogen. And then as more demand builds, around those hubs, the plans will expand out.
Yeah. And that idea that transporting is going to be like transporting oil fits in with what you were saying about how this is going to be used a lot in transport, because basically what hydrogen looks most like is an electrically produced oil or electrically produced gas. It's a replacement really for those hydrocarbons. So it's going to develop and evolve along those same lines, I guess. The blending it, I can see, reducing the carbon footprint of a steel mill by 20% at one go without any changes to what's been done there is worth doing. Other people kind of don't like the idea of blended hydrogen because they see it as something that kind of prolongs the life of the hydrocarbon industry, which is that a council of perfection, and is that people being too ideological about this, where they people want to go all hydrogen too soon?
You know, I wouldn't disparage a 5, 10, or 20% savings of carbon, based on blended hydrogen, if it was available. The consumption in the heat generation industries is so large that, even if we only knock 5% or 10% off through blended hydrogen, that's a huge amount of carbon that won't be generated. I have a problem with people that throw out a good solution because it's not perfect, right? It's like, oh yeah, you're still making carbon. Yeah, but we're making less and we're working on it. So the other thing that's interesting, the thing that I've heard is, with technologies that are being developed around extraction of the hydrogen from the natural gas, the companies, there's demand on both sides of some people want the pure hydrogen, for example, for running fuel cells, but there are also people that want pure natural gas out of that product because they need the higher heat content. They can't afford the loss of heat content that the hydrogen, the blended gas causes. And so, I think you'll have benefit on both sides if you get to the really re-separating the hydrogen at scale,
And this can be
because
done.
the natural gas system as a transport and storage is, a huge advantage. Jack Brouwer at University of California, Irvine, often talks about, you take 100 miles of natural gas pipeline with 5% hydrogen blended. That's a lot of hydrogen, and if you can use it that way, use the natural gas system as storage and transport, that'll advance hydrogen, I think, quite fast.
And going off at a tangent, sources of hydrogen. I've seen a couple of articles recently about gold hydrogen, the pure hydrogen that can be dug out of the ground. I mean, is this a myth? Is it a bit of hype?
I missed your last part of your
Yeah.
question.
Sorry, is
I know I heard the part about is hydrogen coming from the ground.
Yeah, I mean, is that a realistic prospect? Do you think
So,
we're ever going to get anything from that?
I think it's from the things that I only know what I've read about those as well. I think it the optimistic views that I've heard about it, have said, hey, it's there, it's in quantities that are large, and no one has ever really looked for it before, because they were always looking for oil. And so once we start looking for it, we expect we'll find large reserves just because of the way that it could be created. Interestingly, I read this just this morning. I read an article from an oil and gas industry magazine that was, thumbing their nose at, now they're even saying you can get hydrogen from the ground, just like we get oil. Why don't we just focus on oil from the ground? And so I don't know. I think if if they've raised the hackles on the oil and gas industry enough that they're paying attention even to just ridicule, maybe there is something real to it, that the hydrogen mining industry, and the I think they call it white hydrogen out of the ground now, right, is a possibility. But like every other piece of the hydrogen industry, it's not gonna snap our fingers and now we'll be able to replace oil and gas with a mined hydrogen. Whether it's it just will take some time to get to scale, and then we'll have the same transport problems that we do. Like we said, start with trucks, move to trains, move to pipelines. We'll probably be the same sequence.
Yes. And wherever these hydrogen mines are, they'll probably not be terribly convenient for the places where you need the hydrogen.
More than likely, and who knows, maybe they'll even, find them close to where the oil and gas reserves are. I think that with the ability of renewable energy, wind and solar, to produce hydrogen as an energy storage medium, there could be a significant shift in who the real energy producers in the world are. Over the next 50 years or so, Australia already has a plan to turn their abundant solar resources into hydrogen that they, liquefied hydrogen that they send around the world in ships, cryogenic storage ships. There may be no, maybe this would be an opportunity for sub-Saharan Africa to become dominant in an energy space because, or anywhere around the equator, the equatorial countries will have an advantage because they have more sunshine hit them than any other spot on Earth, and more reliable and more consistent throughout the year than anywhere else. Floating PV panels are now becoming a place of interest, and now even the island nations could get into very large hydrogen production, in that case. So, I mean, when you start thinking about the ways that hydrogen is produced, mining, yeah, okay, mining might be a good. It should be cheap, maybe even cheaper than the electrolysis because you'll have capital equipment, but I don't think you'll have the amount of capital equipment that you have with a, a wind farm or a large solar factory or even a floating solar factory or something like that. And we already have a long history of mining natural resources and gases like that. So it seems like technology transfer would happen pretty quickly in a mining solution, but it's going to be very interesting over the next, like I said, the next 50 years as to who becomes if hydrogen becomes a dominant fuel, then who are the providers of that around the world? I think it could be a significant shift from where it is today.
Yeah, that's right. The plans to ship it from Australia are really interesting because there's, countries not too far away from there, like Singapore, that simply need renewable energy that they have not got.
And hydrogen is a transportable energy solution, right? I mean, we know it can be cryogenically stored. That we have liquefied natural gas that is already distributed around the world. Liquefied hydrogen, okay, it's more technically challenging, but fundamentally, it's kind of the same thing.
So sometime not too far from now, we might be driving hydrogen cars or have the choice of hydrogen or electric. I guess I might go for hydrogen. It sounds which would you prefer, a hydrogen or a battery car?
I think actually that hydrogen cars will it's the same as we were talking about in the portfolio of solutions for data center backup. Battery cars will I think maybe be dominant in terms of electrifying the transportation industry, but there are applications where hydrogen makes more sense, like long distance heavy haul trucking, because the you know if you have a vehicle that can be 100,000 pounds, or what does that turn out to? 50,000 kilos. And you have 20,000 kilos of battery in order to make it travel long distances, and it takes you, a day and a half to recharge that battery pack. It won't be as interesting as if you can just add a few fuel tanks, high pressure hydrogen fuel tanks, and run a hydrogen truck over that same route and carry more transport, carry more payload, rather than carrying batteries. I actually think that one of the most important applications for hydrogen will begin to, over the next few years, become battery electric vehicle fast charging stations. If you are familiar at all with the how long it takes to get a megawatt of power from an electric utility to put in a fast charging station, it takes a really long time. Whereas companies like General Motors and Plug Power are making standalone container-sized battery electric vehicle charging stations that are powered by hydrogen fuel cells. And they can get the DC power that's needed. They can get the high voltage. They can get the high currents that they need with no connection to the grid. And so, you know, now putting in a charging station, a fast charging station at, say, a convenience store or a truck stop or a hotel, you know, becomes a much easier solution. You just drop a container down in the parking lot. Now cars can pull up, they can get an 80% charge in 15 or 20 minutes. They can, you know, if they go into the store and spend a little money, they buy the electricity that's generated by the hydrogen right there. And once a week or every few days, you know, a hydrogen tanker comes by and refuels the container full of battery electric vehicle. And you could, you know, you could also have a tap for the few hydrogen vehicles that'll be around. And that might be a way to start expanding the hydrogen vehicle fleet as well. So that's my my thought these days is that I think that hydrogen in terms of vehicle transport and especially personal vehicle, you know, cars, will start to expand through the battery electric vehicle chargers first and biggest. And then, you know, the hydrogen cars will take their place where they're needed for long haul people that, you know, do long trips and things like that.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay.
I just happened to know that one of the first megawatt scale generators, hydrogen power generators, is going to a logistics company to help them recharge battery electric vehicles. And so, you know, we'll see. How that goes, whether that industry demand could be much higher than the data center industry, because, you know, how many convenience stores are there in the U.S. and around, right, that need fuel, that are actually fueling stations, and now you're an electric fueling station that's just a different kind of tanker that comes by once a week.
Yeah, great idea. Okay, I think that's all we've got time for, and a good place to end it on. Look beyond data centers, hydrogen for transport. Many thanks for talking to me, Mark, and I look forward to catching up with whatever you're up to next. Brilliant, thank you for your time.
All right, thank you, Peter.
Sustainability is no longer a nice to have, it's a priority. Vertiv Power, cooling and IT management solutions for critical infrastructure are designed to reduce the use of energy, water, and space. From innovative liquid cooling to dynamic grid services, we work hand in hand with customers to enable them to meet their data center sustainability goals. Visit us at vertiv.com and see what we can do for you.
Thanks for listening to the Zero Downtime Podcast. Brought to you in partnership with Vertiv, the world's leading critical digital infrastructure provider. Don't forget to like this podcast and subscribe to our channel. We'll see you again next time.